Today is June 7th, 1994. This is Margaret Van Cleve. I will be interviewing Fred Huprich, a lifelong Alaskan who spent his early childhood in Nenana. Also present is his wife, Luella Huprich. This tape is made possible by a grant from Igloo No. 4 Foundation, Pioneers of Alaska. We are recording in the Huprich's home in Aurora Subdivision in Fairbanks. So you lived in Nenana during a time that sternmullers were still in existence along the Tanana-Nenana rivers, the late 1920s, early 30s. Let's talk a little bit about your early childhood experiences as you remember them. Could you start by telling a little bit about your family, how your parents happened to be in Nenana, or did they come to Fairbanks first before settling in Nenana?
Yes, I can do that. My father came up prior to my mother by a few years. I don't know just how long, but he came with his father. His father was an engineer, chief engineer on the stern wheelers that plied the Tanana-Yukon rivers in the early days. And he spent the summer up, and of course freeze-up came along, and put the boats away for the winter, while my grandfather and dad-to-be went back outside. And then the next spring they'd come back again. Well, after the second year of this operation, my dad decided to stay in Alaska. And at about that time they were building the Alaska Railroad too at the same time. So he got a job working on that. And then during the winter time, why, he got a job in Nenana as working in the fire hall. Him and several of his old buddies, and they had horses for running the fire carts around and stuff like that. So they had to maintain horses and stuff like that. Then during that time, why, my mother come on the scene. Oh, I don't know what year that was, but it was around 1918. I believe she was about 16, 17 years old. And the reason she came to the country, she came straight from Germany through New York, Ellis Island, and crossed the United States by train and steamship to Alaska. Well, I believe the Alaska Railroad had started passenger service. This had to be in the early, 18, 19, or 20, somewhere in that area, 22 maybe. And her uncle was up here in the early country. He came through Dawson City, and his wife was a baker and concession type operation. He baked all over the country, and he worked his way into Fairbanks, and he had a big bakery here, and operated here. He decided he needed help, and that's when he sent to Germany for my mother and her brother, Henry. My mother's name was Elizabeth. Rappolt was their name, her maiden name. And then they came in to, he decided to leave Fairbanks and start an operation bakery and place down there in Nenana. That's when he had mother and her brother come in. So they come to Nenana, and of course she worked in the bakery along with her brother and stuff. And her brother didn't last too long. He only stayed a couple years and went back outside. And mother stayed here, and of course dad being a young man and mother being a young lady there in Nenana, they had bright eyes for each other and got married. Well, this was probably in 1923, I believe, 23, maybe 24. And of course I have started a family. I had a brother named George, which has passed away now. He was the oldest boy. Then Robert came along, and George was born in 24. Robert was born in 25, and I come along in 1926. Then a year later, and all during this time, I better back up a little bit here, my father started a transfer service in Nenana, probably a year before he married. And during the time we spent in Nenana, we always had a transfer service. We hauled wood, coal, and we put up 400 or 500 ton of ice. Of course, this was later years when I was old enough to work and the other two boys. And my father then sort of turned the transfer business over to us boys, and he went to work for the Northern Commercial Company as a meat cutter and clerk and stuff like that. And us kids carried on the transfer business, and of course going to school and stuff like that all the time. And after school, my mother would pack up a lunch and we'd head for the woods and go down and cut a cord or two of wood and put them on our, we had Model A trucks, two of them, and they'd haul about two cords each on the truck, so we'd come home with four cords of wood. And then on weekends, if the train delivered a carload of coal in, why, we'd deliver that all over town. So that was our life as far as Nenana. And of course, we had a lot of colorful deals going there with general parties around the town. The pioneers had put on parties and Friday evenings and stuff like that. We'd go to dances and things like that. And then, let's see, I think what day year it was, my family kind of split up, and this was in 1943. And mother and the two girls, oh, I forgot to mention that she had two daughters after that. One was born in 1927, Martha, she is the oldest girl, and then Betty Elizabeth, or Betty Lou, came along in 1934, 33. And that's the size of our family, three boys and two girls. And of course, family, mother and father split up and we moved to Fairbanks. And I worked around here in odd jobs and went to school, and the two girls went to school here in Fairbanks. And mother was a clerk for the Northern Commercial Company in the store in the grocery department. And then on later years, why, of course, the two brothers got drafted during in the early part of the war, 1943, 44, and then I come along, got drafted in 45, and went through the service in Anchorage, and I was lucky.
Brothers, the war was over before you.
Yeah, the war was almost over before I...
Could we back up a little bit and talk about some of your experiences in Nenana? For instance, school. What did you have in terms of a village school in those days?
We had, our school's name was Franklin K. Lane School, and it's probably on a register someplace. I don't know whether they still call that or not, but it was a big log building, and it had four rooms upstairs, definite rooms upstairs for the classrooms. Downstairs was more like a big recreational room where we played during recesses and stuff. And they would have teachers come in from the States and live there and teach us and everything else. And one year we were probably only about 10, 12 years old maybe, and we got all the boys lined up. And right across from the school was a vacant block lot, but it was never built on. It had a lot of brush and stuff and trees in it. One year, particular year this winter, it was really lots of rabbits. So we made a big drive through this woods, and we must have picked up 25, 30 rabbits. And we drove them, and we had some girls keep the big doors open to the entrance to the schoolhouse. So we drove all the
rabbits
right into the lower part of the school. Of course, they had stairways on each end of the rec room down below, and of course, the rabbits were hopping all up into the classrooms and all over. And the principal wasn't too happy about that, or the teachers. And
disrupted the classroom like a little.
Then towards springtime, why, there was on one other side of the schoolhouse, there was a big field which a farmer had, and he'd put up in wheat or grain or something like that. And before he ever put any crop in for this that summer, why, we'd get out in the spring and we'd dig holes in the ground and put 5-gallon cans or big gallon cans down in the ground with the tops level with the ground. And the field mice were just lousy with field mice around there. And of course, they'd run along and fall down in these cans. Well, we'd have half a dozen mice, or maybe, you know, quite a few. And we'd take these mice, put them in our pocket, and we'd go to school. Well, we'd turn them loose. We had a whole bunch of mice running around school. And then there was kind of a swampy area there, and we'd go and collect frogs. And we'd put these, the old style desks where you sat behind them and then the whole top lifted up and you stored books underneath the top.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'd have, over on the right.
We'd have that full of frogs and mice and just raising Cain all the time. We were probably the worst bunch of school children in the country.
Where was the school located in relationship, say, to the railroad station?
Well, it would be probably 1, 2, 3 blocks.
Upriver?
No, well, kind of upriver.
By the church?
But it'd be more inland from the river.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sitting right at the exact spot the new schoolhouse is sitting on now. They used the same area, but they built a new school there, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, I've seen
things
that.
Like
it's
that.
Nice.
But it sat right in the same spot that the new one is now. And but it was a tiny school for that neighborhood, you know.
Did it include high school as well, or was it just elementary school?
No, it was all 12 grades. When I went to high school there, I went to freshman year twice, because halfway through the school year we were such a bad lot that the principal, he was also the high school teacher, quit and got out of the country. I guess he couldn't stand us, or the pay wasn't enough or something. But there was only 8 of us in high school. That was all covering all 4 grades.
Mm-hmm.
This was just prior to the war. And so that, you know, and there wasn't probably more than 50 kids in the whole school counting all 12 grades.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of your classmates must have been the Coghill brothers.
Well, yes, all the Coghills. Of course, Bill and Bob, the older ones, were out of school. I think I went to school with Jack, he's a year older than I am, and the other two were out of high school by then, and probably up here going to college, I believe they were.
Mm-hmm. Was Jack in on the frog collecting?
Oh, you betcha, he was just as bad as the rest.
And Jack, wasn't just you and your brothers then.
Yeah, but then we have a lot of native children went to the same school with us. It was, you know, not separated or anything, segregated.
Mm-hmm. So there was not a BIA school?
And at one time, I don't suppose there was more than 5 or 6 white children going to that school when I was there, or my last year or so.
Mm-hmm. So it was
the rest
mostly
of them
native.
Were part native and full native and stuff. They were a wonderful bunch of kids. We were just full of mischief.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the native community. Did they live right in town, or did they live out of ways?
Oh, they had a village, yes, that was out of town just a little ways. And then they had a mission there. Of course, the mission had their own school. There was probably 30 mission children for all ages and all classes that lived upriver from Nenana. It was a big building there, frame, all wood. They had their own garden and greenhouses and church and school. And
did they have an orphanage or
it was basically, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. It was run by the
Episcopal Church.
Yes.
Now, would that have
Bishop
been?
Bentley, I don't know if people here that probably would listen to this would recognize Bishop Bentley's name. He was a bishop around at that time, though. He was just the Reverend preacher there at Nenana, and he run that mission and church. They had a church up at the mission, and then they had an Episcopal church downtown, too.
Oh, so they are two different locations.
Yes. And the church downtown, I think, got something happened to it, and then they moved the, it was a log church up at the mission. They moved downtown, and it, today it's still standing.
Oh, so that was originally from
the
mission.
That was originally the mission church in, up there in Nenana.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved it down, Episcopal church. And they had a sister, or not, a, yes, a sister, and also a missionary nurse living at this mission in Nenana. What the heck was the name of that mission?
St. Mark's.
St. Mark's Mission.
And I guess the missionary nurse was really the only medical person in the area.
Right.
And so could everybody go?
Yes, a lot of us kids, we'd get a cut or a step on a nail or something. That's the first place we'd go, is run up to the mission. And you know, they had a little infirmary there, a little deal where they, you had a couple of beds in it, you know, and all the necessary equipment at that time to help take care of a person, you know, and stuff. And the nurse was well trained. And at one time, that's how Bob Coggill, Jack's brother's wife, first wife, came to the country. She was a missionary nurse at St. Mark's Mission. And Bob and her got together and fell in love and got married, and they were great people. Then there's other things in Nenana that we were just full of mischief all the time. They had a marine, what they called a marine ways, at the same place that they built the steamer Nenana. Steamer Nenana was pre-cut and loaded on steamship and rail, and then railroad cars and sooner in Seward, and hauled up to Nenana by rail. And they had a spur going into this, what we call the marine ways, and hauled that lumber. And there was an old timer by the name of Haggard Olson. He was the master shipbuilder, and he was in charge of putting this steamship together, the steamboat stern wheeler Nenana. And it took them a few years, but most of the lumber was pre-cut in Seattle, and then they put it all together like a big jigsaw puzzle there in Nenana, you know. And of course they had a lot of cutting and fitting and do after they got things.
Mm-hmm. And did that employ a lot of local people?
Yes, it employed quite a few local people, and most of them Finns and Swedes and Norwegians, you know.
What about some of the native people? Did they help?
Oh yes, they hired a lot of them. And that was a big thing around Nenana in the early days, too. A lot of the native people were good workers, and they worked for the railroad. And of course, at that time, the railroad, Alaska Railroad, owned that steamboat, Nenana, government owned. And of course, they worked on that in the summer, and then the, what they called section people. Each railroad section had 8-10 people stationed on the railroad, which were about 8 to 10 miles apart.
Mm-hmm.
And they maintained the roadbed, railroad bed, Gandhi dancing on the ties. That means, you know, putting new ties in and packing them down. And most of these were native, well, a lot of white people too. All the foremen were white people, but a lot of the natives, and they'd done a lot of work all up and down the river. And then in the winter time, a lot of natives would contract with the government to go down and cut wood for the steamboats all along the river. They had wood camps where the boat would pull in and load up with 8-10 cords of wood, enough to burn to get down the river to the next big stop, you know.
This was specifically for the Nenana then?
No, for all the steamboats.
All steamboats.
There was boats out of Dawson City and Whitehorse that come down. This is another thing in the early days that I can remember as a child. They had what they called a round robin. That's what we called it. The steamship would leave Seattle, ocean-going steamship with 50, 60 passengers or more, well, say 100 passengers. All right, It leaves Seattle and power up to Skagway. And then these passengers, half of them would get on the railroad train at Skagway, and the other half would stay on the steamship. Well, it continued on to Seward. And the ones at Skagway got off, they got off and rode the narrow gauge railroad to Whitehorse. And they had two or three stern wheelers there. One of them in particular was the steamer Yukon. And there's many more prior to my time, but the steamer Yukon. And was in my mind now, and it'd take about 50 tourists on that, in the staterooms and stuff. Then they'd stern wheel it all the way down the Yukon and stop at the Eagle and Circle City and Fort Yukon, and then come all the way down to the mouth of the Yukon, which, or mouth of the Tanana. Then they'd turn and come up the Tanana River to Nenana. And at the same time, this Nenana was an exchange point again. All the ones that went to Seward and come up the Alaska Railroad to Fairbanks and then backtracked to, time-wise, backtracked to Nenana to meet the stern wheeler. And all the 50 that come through Seward would go back on the stern wheeler to Whitehorse and catch the train back to Skagway. And then the other ones would get on the railroad and go come up to Fairbanks and back to Seward, get on the boat, and go back home.
Oh, so they each had their boat ride and their train ride.
Right.
Oh, I wish they still had that in existence.
When I was a kid, then I serviced these stern wheelers. You see, the Nenana never was a tourist boat. It was just
a work boat.
But they had a number of staterooms, 15, 20 staterooms, and they just carried passengers between Marshall and Nenana for all the villages along that way. That's the way most people traveled in the early days. They waited for the steamer. But back again to my job was we put up 400 or 500 ton of ice every winter in a big ice house, thick walls about 2 feet thick with sawdust and stuff. No refrigeration, just sawdust. And we'd store it in levels and then I put sawdust all around each cake. Well, in the summertime we contracted with the steamboats to furnish ice. And on each steamboat they had a room that was really thick walled and everything. And we'd put in 2 to 3 ton of ice in these little cool rooms they got. And this is what these steamboats used
for
cocktails, lemonade, whatever they wanted to use it for, ice cream or whatever.
And this was with your transport business?
Yeah, this is part
of that.
Alaska Transfer number 1. That's the truck right there. That picture.
Oh, this picture.
That was one of our trucks.
Number 1.
And that's the three boys and father. That's my father there.
Standing with his foot on the running board.
And then George has got his hand up to his face. And then me and then Bob.
Uh-huh. And that looks like about 1920.
Well, that truck was a 1926 model, I think. Of course, that's probably about 1931 or 2, right in there. And that's backed up to the railroad depot.
Oh,
That's in existence now.
And is
Which is
historic
now
register.
A historical.
And also a nice, very nice museum.
Yeah, very good, very good.
Sounds like you were pretty busy most of the time working, but did you have any time for recreation?
Oh, you bet. We always played baseball out in the middle of the street. Of course, our family, we only had about 2 or 3 vehicles in the whole town. We had 3 of them. 2 Model A trucks, and then later years we had a Chevrolet truck, but we had a 37 Plymouth pickup. And part of my job too, we had the only pickup in town, so I got the job of making grocery deliveries for the NC company twice a day, once 10 o'clock in the morning and once at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the people would come down, order their groceries from the store, and Dad and me, if I'm working in the store, would pack them up in boxes, and then I'd back up, load them in maybe 6-8 deliveries around town into the pickup, and haul them, deliver them to the people that ordered them, and then it was done. And that was a source of income for me and stuff. Mm-hmm. But we, like I say, we all had bicycles and we rode them around town, and there was lots of we seemed to be busy all the time of recreation. We'd be out about 2 miles out of town was an old gravel pit we used for swimming pool. And we were out there just about every night in the warm summer nights. And then that big hill across from Nenana, well, we'd be over there playing. We'd have to either borrow a boat or walk across the railroad bridge, which we'd done many times, get up and walk across the railroad bridge and go play on the hill and stuff like that. Yes. And then a little few years later, the older boys, they got a hold of a houseboat, and we rebuilt that. And we got an old car engine out of an old car there. It was a milk wagon. And we put that in the boat, and we'd go puttering around there and hijack a fish out of the Mission fish wheel and go up. It was a nice houseboat. We had cooking utensils and everything on it. And we'd go up and cook a big, of course, we'd go raid a garden someplace and get some potatoes and turnips and go.
Real subsistence living.
Yeah, oh, it was great. And then in the fall time, we'd take it down river, which was about 6, 8, 10 miles down river, to a lake called Linder Lake. And duck hunting. And we'd go down that, and then we'd have to go up a little slough to get to the lake, about a half a mile or so. And we had a nice cabin there to live in, and we'd go duck hunting morning, noon, and night, and get a bunch of ducks. And then sometimes we'd get a bull moose out there on the lake that happened to by, and we'd nail him and bring him home with us too. But many, many things there. But we were pretty mischievous on a lot of little deals too. We played pranks against the Alaska Railroad all the time. I remember several of us, the approach to the railroad bridge there in Nenana is kind of, it's on a slight grade climbing up to it. Well, we got a whole bucket of grease one time. And we went up there and we greased about 100 feet of railroad track. Well, the train was making approach to the bridge and taking a run of it, and he got part way up, and the drive wheels on the locomotive got into that grease, and he just spun out and he couldn't go no place. Well, that scared, we didn't realize the bad thing we'd done. And we played it pretty cool around Nenana for quite a while, because the section, they called out the section crew to go up there and gasoline wash all them rails to get the grease off of them.
Did they have a pretty good idea who had done it?
Oh, no, they couldn't blame it on anybody, really, because...
Yeah. That was the first and last time you did that?
Oh, no, we'd done many other things for the Alaska Railroad. It was fun being a kid, but we never destroyed anything. It's just that we had a lot of
imagination.
Fun. Yeah. You know, we'd borrow their what they call little flat cars. They pulled them behind speeders on the section crew, hauling ties or railroad iron, and out to their job when they were working out on the railroad.
Are those the things that you...
No, that's a three-wheeler pump speeder.
Oh.
We borrowed one of them one time, too, three of us, and went fishing. It was about 3 miles out to Fish Creek from town, going south on the railroad. And we just hated to walk, so we just go borrow
free
that.
Free transportation.
And stuff like that. And borrow their speeders and...
Yeah, it sounds like you didn't lack for activities if you...
No, we were... this is all the kids, the Wright brothers, the Coggills, the Robinsons. That was another family that lived in Nenana that we grew up with. Although they left probably in early 40s. Their father was the manager, power plant manager at Mount McKinley National Park. They'd move down there in the summers. Well, then they decided to close the power plant at Nenana, And when the winter summer season was over at McKinley Park, they sent their father down to Anchorage to work in the powerhouse down there. This is for the Alaska Railroad.
So the powerhouse was part of the NC Company?
No, not in Nenana. Yeah. It belonged to the Alaska Railroad.
Oh, I see.
And they supplied just electricity and steam heat and power for the Alaska Railroad buildings themselves.
But not for the rest of the town?
Not for the rest of the town.
What did people do about electricity?
Well, we had our own city power plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was owned by a person by the name of Henry Kaiser. And his son is still alive and living in Anchorage. His name is Henry Kaiser, too. And would have a lot of history of Alaska and that area. And his sister, Lena, Lena Dewey, and she lives up on Chena Ridge. And they live just basically next door to us there in Nenana, and they've got a little bit of Native in them. But they're beautiful people, and be a lot of history that if you ever get a chance to interview her, why.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like there was really quite a bit of employment in Nenana.
Well, just mostly during the summer months due to the Alaska Railroad hauling freight up to be put on the stern wheelers to be hauled down the river. See, down the river there was lots of mining, and a lot of that freight went through Nenana to get to the mining communities on the Yukon and Tanana. Well, not so much Tanana, but the Yukon. Down around Ruby, and then up the Iditarod River and up the Koyukuk River and places like that. And they hauled fuel by drums down that way, and then that's how they got their equipment in, tractors and drag lines and even food stuff. And they'd have to take it off the railroad boxcars and stuff and then transfer it over to the barges that the steamboats pushed.
Mm-hmm.
And haul the freight down that way. And these were wood-burning steamboats, so they, you know, there was just lots of labor for anybody that wanted to work. Of course, you were only working, getting $3 or $4 a day plus keep, you know.
Mm-hmm. This is working for the steam...
For the railroad.
Railroad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which biggest part of our employment there at, in that community was Alaska Railroad. Then... there was lots of trapping in the wintertime. That was kind of a main stopping off point for trappers over in the Kantishna country and, well, all the rivers. And when the steamboats stopped running, then the dog teams started running, you know, and everybody down the river had dog teams and stuff, so they'd come into Nenana with 10, 15 dogs with two sleds. And load up their winter supply of trapping stuff, and a lot of them came in during over the Christmas on New Year's holiday to get grub and sell their furs, and then they'd go mm-hmm. back to the trap line. And
so it really was a hub for quite a large area.
It was a hub, yeah. And just like Fairbanks was the end of the rail in the early days, and they brought all that material and equipment and stuff for mining, which is the backbone of Fairbanks was mining, you know,
mm-hmm.
and quite a bit of trapping out of here, too. And then early enough in the early days where the airplane got started, too, which took the trappers out to the bush, and they'd make a date to come out and drop them some eggs or whatever. That's one job I had when just before I got drafted into the Army. I was working for Alaska Airlines, and I got to fly out on many trips, and we'd have orders for trappers, and the pilot knew right where the trapper's cabin was. He says, "Okay, Fred, kick it out the door." So I'd kick his mail and his eggs and some fresh stuff that was available and stuff like that. And we'd fly over his trapper's cabin and kick it out the door. And
you must have packed the eggs quite well.
Oh, yes. In fact...
Or did you have a little parachute or something?
No, it was just not.
Just
and
out.
The first time I did it, I packed the eggs what I thought was pretty good, but when he come in, from his trap line with his dogs. Why, he got a hold of them. He says, well, please don't send any more eggs because they're all scrambled when I get them. So I says, we'll send you some eggs. So I got a hold of a brand new gallon can. And I cracked all the eggs and put them into the gallon can. And I must have been 3 dozen eggs or so. And put a top back on it and sealed it all and still wrapped it in a box with a bunch of what was cut up newspaper. I forget what they call that stuff. A seltzer or something like that.
Yeah, kind of shredded newspaper.
Yeah, shredded newspaper. I'd packed it in a box and that, and then I'd kick it out that way. He says that worked fine. He got lots of eggs, and then he divided them up, I guess, or whatever, and froze them.
Oh, and then thawed them out as he needed
them. Yeah, and thawed them out as he needed them.
So you had the Northern Commercial store, and also Cog Hills had a store?
Well, let's go back there and talk about Nenana itself. When I was raised around there, we had, NC Company, which was a chain store. They had stores all over Alaska. It was a pretty good-sized company. But then individual operators like Coghill Store, Fowler Store, Hagstrom Store, and a guy by the name of Louis Hamill. These were 5 stores there now, and they were all the same kind of stores. They all sold groceries, they all sold clothing, and some hardware. And the later years, back, say, 38, 9, 40, Alaska passed a law where they had to have their booze separate store from the main store.
In a separate building or a separate
room?
Well,
it could be attached, but it was a separate room with an outdoor entrance. So, these were all in competition with each other, and there wasn't really that many people in Nenana at that time.
What do you think the population would have been at that time? Probably more than now?
Well, at one time before my time there, Nenana probably had a population of 6,000-7,000 people.
That was during the construction period.
Cut into the railroad and that, but after that it dropped down quite a bit. Railroad had a big operation there. They had a hospital and 2 or 3 dormitories, and then they put up a number of 8-10 houses for their higher up personnel, you know, like railroad agents and stuff like that.
Foremen and
stuff like that lived in these nice homes. And they put in a sewer system and a water system, and part of the downtown business district in Nenana had them facilities. Because all the time I was raised there in Nenana, why, we had running water in the house and hot air furnaces, wood burning, but hot air or coal, and sewer system where everything was indoors. Feeling
I was going to ask you about that.
Because we were living right downtown, you know, we were on the main streets all the time of our lives. My dad was a fire chief there and police chief during the part-time, I mean, it was just a title. And our shop and garage was big enough to hold the fire equipment, so we kept the fire equipment in our garage in the early days. And like I say, it was all modern and everything else. And we had the transportation. We didn't have any fire trucks. They were just a hose cart and a chemical cart that we towed behind a vehicle, or they used to tow them with horses in the early days, and then when we got vehicles, well, we could
tow them behind the
pickup or the Model A truck or wherever, and there was maybe only a half a dozen fire hydrants in the main part of town. Out of town, you just forgot everything. You just went out there with a little chemical cart and tried to put it out.
Did you have any bad fires during the winter? Any that really threatened
Not really bad fires. There's probably 2 or 3, but that we had a whole block burn down there one time. And this was in October of, I think, 1935, right in there. It burned the whole block. At that time, it took a number of restaurants. It took my mother's uncle store, Cargill store, Fowler store, and a couple other buildings.
This would be
too.
On the main street?
It was right on the main street. And it's the block that right now where the community center's sitting on. That's on the riverside end of the block, and then it goes all the way to the other end where that Tortilla Lodge is sitting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, from that lodge back down to the community center, that whole block went. Although there was the first part of it was a vacant lot, a couple vacant lots mm-hmm. in there. But then it was solid buildings all the way down to that other street where the lodge is sitting now. That Tortilla.
Did they know what caused that fire?
Gosh, I don't know.
But they were all wooden buildings.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. So all welding.
And then all together.
Right,
so
all just stacked like a
domino.
Street front, you know.
Yeah, so there's no concrete wall to act as a fire break.
We never had any concrete in Enana except for maybe the railroad depot's basement. And everything else was wood cribbed and wooden sidewalks. There wasn't a cement sidewalks nowhere to be found in Enana.
Yeah, dry wood goes up quickly,
yeah.
too.
I remember we had several floods down there in the springtime, and we'd be paddling around and using the sidewalks for rafts, us kids pushing them around, you know, because they're just like a raft.
So they were not big sections, maybe?
Yeah, they'd be, well, no, they'd break up in maybe 10-foot-long sections by, well, some of the sidewalks in front of the stores were probably 10, 12 feet wide, you know,
mm-hmm.
and we'd just use them as rafts. And a lot of kids had canoes and stuff like
well,
that.
You probably didn't use life jackets.
No.
Never heard of them.
Didn't even know what a life jacket was.
Yeah.
But I know we used to canoe to school that spring when we had the flood. And school was still going when the flood came along. And
so these were usually breakup floods that you had.
Then in the springtime, too, after we got to be about 14 years old, we got a chance to work on the Nenana Ice Pool. They'd let us out of school, some of the older kids, and to do the typing and sorting of the tickets for the Nenana Ice Classic. And my father was manager of that several different times, of the Nenana Ice Classic. I probably watched that river go out dozens of times over the course of years, and I even go down now if I get a chance to watch it go out and stuff. And I won the Nenana Ice Pool twice on a pool.
Mm-hmm.
Not while I was in Enana, while I was here
but
in Fairbanks.
But here in Fairbanks, I was going to say, you'd have a slight edge having lived there and,
and
observed it going out.
But I was on that pool twice with different pools and stuff. And didn't win very much, though. Most I ever got out of it was $392.
Well, that would pay for your tickets
a
few times over. Well, that's been in existence for quite a while.
1915, somewhere early, 16, 18, somewhere.
Yeah, that's the oldest one in Alaska, certainly.
It got, I believe, started when they were building that Alaska Railroad Bridge. There was a big construction outfit there building the Alaska Railroad Bridge, and I believe that's probably about the time they started. It was railroad crews that actually started the guessing game on the Tanana River there.
Certainly, it's been something people have enjoyed participating since.
Yeah.